Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. Somebody sent me a Facebook message today about the legalization of prostitution. And it got me really thinking, do I approve of prostitution? Of course not. I'm a wife of 46 years. I didn't grow up in a time when everybody, you know, was promiscuous. I mean, there were a few promiscuous people, but it wasn't as acceptable as it is today, behavior-wise. And I also think it's a little demeaning to be somebody who thinks that it's the only way that they can make a living. And if you listen to the show at all, you know that I feel very strongly about women's rights and equality for everyone. But of course, before we can adapt ourselves to having equality for everyone, it seems to me that the people in this world that carry our children and do the things that women do in general should be equal. Very recently, we passed the law about gay marriages, which I am also in favor of, because I think since we were all born with our own brains, minds, whatever you want to call them, our choices should be ours. I mean, I don't think people should make choices that govern anyone else. But I do think personal choices are exactly that. Choices that you make personally about yourself, about who you are, what you are, what you want, what you'll do to get it. So it made me do a little bit of research, and I was surprised to see how much research there is, how many surveys have been taken, how many actual studies about prostitution, and how many different pros and cons. I heard everything from, you know, it's the reason we have slave trade because of prostitution, which I think is ludicrous. Any movie that you watch, it doesn't have to be an old movie, it could be a movie that was made yesterday, but if it's about biblical times and things like that, there has always been women, young girls in some cases, that grew up believing that was the only thing they had to offer and did so in return for something. Anything, sometimes money, sometimes a place to stay, sometimes food, whatever we're talking about. So again, I do find it demeaning, but that's my own outlook on it. I very gratefully have never been in a position where that was the only thing I thought I could do to make sure that I survived. However, if I was, I might have made that choice because I'm a relatively strong woman, and if I thought that was the only choice I had, I might make that. So when we talk about legalizing it, though, I found so many different pros and cons. I found so many statistics that kind of blew me away. For one, at this given moment, there are 40 million prostitutes at work. Now, also the word prostitute is the meaning of prostitute means that you take, for your sexual favors, you take something in return, whether it be money or a gift or whatever it is. And it is completely legal and regulated within 22 countries. And the median price for many prostitutes in South Africa is very minute. It's a dollar in some of your South African areas. Studies reveal 1 in 10 men in the world have purchased a prostitute. So that means if you even have a relatively small family, somebody in your family has at one time or another paid for some favors. The sex industry is huge in Japan and Thailand. In America, it's also very large, but in America, 80,000 citizens are arrested a year for soliciting sex. Now, I never got a count on how many people there are in the United States, but 80,000 a year in the United States doesn't seem like a real big number to me. I could be wrong about that. I will have to follow up on that and see what the percentage is, 80,000, because I don't know what our population is. The murder rate for an American prostitute is 204 for every 100,000. That's also pretty small. Not that I like any number on that category, but that is kind of small. Men between 35 and 44 are the most common demographic of customer. The top three reasons that men pay for sex, I can't read on this piece of paper. I already read it and I don't remember what it said. This demand unfortunately spurs $58 billion in sex trafficking. So maybe there is some validity to what I said before, what I had read. 2.5 million victims are currently being trafficked. So there is some validity to that. But that's hard for me to understand, to be honest with you. I think trafficking for sex slavery and things like that is done by someone other than the prostitute. So it seems to me that we have the legalities and the illegalities of those statistics would mean we have some bad guys at work, not a prostitute who's trafficking other girls. But maybe somebody will have something else to tell me. Prostitution is defined as the act of providing sexual services to a person in exchange for money, goods, or other services. Well, we've already discussed that. Worldwide, this practice produces over $100 billion in revenue annually. Prostitution practices vary greatly from country to country. Prostitution is legal in some countries. However, prostitution is considered so serious a crime that it is punishable by death in some countries. Currently, prostitution is illegal in the United States, with the exception of a few small jurisdictions in Nevada. Now, if somebody out there can tell me how that can be, I'd really love to hear that, because I did a little bit of research after I read that, and I couldn't find any real worthy reasons for why that's okay, because I understand gambling is legal some places, but that's voted on, that's accepted. All of your neighbors and everybody has to know where the gambling is going to take place, and the zoning gets changed and things like that. But prostitution, that seems a little far-fetched. So, but that's what it says. Nevada has many sections of Nevada. It's legal. But the arguments opposed to the legalized prostitution, they believe that it's simply immoral and should be considered a crime. They also believe that legalizing prostitution would increase the spread of disease, stating that it takes several weeks to get the results from a socially transmitted disease, allowing an infected prostitute to continue infecting her clients. Many also believe that since most sex workers are female, the practice is demeaning to women and enhances the chances of rape and violence. Some go on so far as defining prostitution as a type of rape, since it turns a woman into an object for a man's use. Now, see, I don't quite honestly believe in any of that. Again, I think if a woman has taken or made the choice to be a prostitute, just like a woman who decides to go to war and fight in the front lines, knows she could be hurt. So I have difficulty in having such a broad definition there in regard to all of that. I don't disagree with it being not really high morals. I don't know if it's immoral, because almost everybody I know has sex. So I don't know if I would call it immoral. But it is, it still should be some kind of a choice. However, if anybody asked me and said, Renee, what do you think about this? I'd say, well, I certainly don't want to ever think about my daughter, my granddaughter, my sister, one of my best friends, being some, somebody who feels that that's all they have to offer, for one thing. And secondly, I would be worried about them for all the reasons that we just discussed, between being hurt, being subjected to some kind of a social disease, any of those things. I'd be worried about all of it. But you will never stop it. You will never stop it. And I know some married women who feel that they have prostituted themselves for 50 years. So I think this is one of those kind of topics that there is no true answer to, because you won't change it no matter what you do. It's kind of like prohibition. You know, they took away all the booze and everything and told everybody they couldn't drink anymore, and the speakeasies were born. So there's just some things we can't do anything about. I'm going to bring in Shelley because we're going to talk about this at a little bit of length, because I do want the young people that are out there who, for whatever reasons that I really don't understand totally, even though some of my grandchildren have tried to explain it to me at length, I don't understand why sex has become such a, social pastime instead of a commitment. So I'm going to bring Shell in, and we're going to talk about this. If anybody out there has got something that they'd like to say about this, or they're worried about a teenager that they know and love, by all means, call in at 347-989-0352. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Hi, Miss Shelley. How are you?
Oh, doing real good, Renee. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a fairly good day today.
What happened today?
I said it's been a very good day today.
Yes, for me too. I am pleased to report that.
Good.
Very, very interesting topic. I do have a pretty broad opinion about it. What I mean by that is that, for me, my thoughts on legalizing prostitution, and I also want to make a comment about teenagers having being sexually active. But
right.
First, with regard to legalizing prostitution, personally, I am for it for the following reasons. Because if you legalize prostitution, then you are basically getting rid of some of the dangers of it. The concept behind legalizing it is that you would work at a place that was clean, and there would be regulations for it. You would have to work in a clean facility. The women would have to be screened to make sure that they did not already have any sexually transmitted diseases. There would be a code of conduct. They would be able to get health insurance. I mean, there's a lot of pros where it would become a respectable position. So it's not something that the women who would choose to do it in that regard would not be looking at their profession as something demeaning. It's something that they felt that they were good at, that they enjoyed doing, and they wanted to be able to make money doing it. Regardless of whether or not I would make that choice for myself or would want one of my nieces to do it, I'm not going there right now. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is legalizing prostitution would take a lot of the criminal elements out of the picture. When you're talking about trafficking humans, that is not, you can't legalize that. That is forcing somebody into prostitution against their will. So it would actually heighten the illegality of trafficking as opposed to the legal access to it. If you legalize prostitution, it would actually start diminishing trafficking greatly, because if you can go over here and it's completely legal, and you know that these women are healthy and all that, why would you go to some dark basement somewhere where women are being held captive and being forced to have sex with them, and where you knew that part was still illegal? So it would stop a lot of that. The only trafficking it wouldn't stop is the trafficking for the sake of depravity, where it's not something where men were actually looking for women who were victims, and wanted to do things and that would be permitted in a safe environment. But I've seen some shows on these places, and in Las Vegas, and it was such a big business that I think they legalized it to capitalize on. There was a lot of money to be made there. Men go there, high rollers, they drink a lot, and they wanted women available. So it was almost kind of like a good business decision to legalize it there. And in legalizing it, they decriminalized it. It stopped a lot of the violence. It stopped the women from getting beaten up by their pimps. And those women get health insurance and everything else. So if you can just kind of like disconnect yourself from the morality of it for a moment, which is your own, personal stuff, and I'm talking to people listening
exactly
to this. If you just look at the sociological effects of it, there are obvious benefits. And it comes down to, you cannot preach morality to other people if it's not specifically affecting you. And by legalizing it and decriminalizing it and actually making it a safer environment for these women and getting rid of the pimps, you're actually creating a safer environment for yourself. And what these women do behind closed doors is really none of your business. So whether you think it would be moral for yourself to do it, or your daughter, or your, like you said, or anybody in your close circle, fine, then don't take that profession on for yourself. But to say that somebody else shouldn't do it in that environment comes down to what we've talked many times on this show. It really isn't your business at that point. Because
exactly. I don't disagree. How many times have you heard me say that? I mean, I hope everybody accepts this in the way it was meant. I've often said to people, I'd make a wonderful madam, because that's what I do. I'd make sure all the girls, I'd make sure all the girls were happy and well taken care of, and that everything was safe and everything was clean and everything was the way it needed to be. I part of me gets that. And again, when I say, when I said I wouldn't want to think my daughter or my sister or my best friend, I said I don't want them to think that's all they have to give to somebody to make money. If the reason that somebody turns to a lifestyle like that is because they enjoy it and because they have no qualms about it, they feel as though they're running a business and it's not scarring them inside by doing something because they think it's the only thing that they have that they're worth, then it's different. But I really fear that there's too much of believing that, especially some of these young girls who are beautiful and have beautiful bodies and they see that they can get what they want from men because of these, and they turn to things like this for the wrong reasons. Now, I'll tell you, I've met a couple exotic dancers in my lifetime who absolutely, positively loved what they did for a living. I mean, as far as they were concerned, they were prima ballerinas.
Yep.
That's how they
yep.
saw what they did. They didn't feel like they were doing anything that wasn't beautiful and
exactly.
artful.
Exactly.
Right? And
yep.
if that's the way you feel about what you're doing in the role of a prostitute, for lack of a better word, I don't even really like that word, but if that's, if you're doing it because, you know, there's some enjoyment, you feel like you're keeping, you know, however you feel about it, and it doesn't make you shameful, then I would say to you, you know, it is your choice. And I still believe no matter what the reasons are, it should be your choice. Nobody should be able to tell you whether you can or you cannot.
Right.
Just like all the other choices we have, you know, abortion and right on down the line, being married, not being married, having children, not having children. It should be the decision of the vessel. No one else.
Right. And the only time society should get involved or legal, like the police should be involved, is when someone is being forced to do it against their will. That's the only
exactly.
time. Other than that,
well, of course.
You know, but when it's their choice and it's a good, safe environment, you know, like I said, I'm for legalizing it because I think it makes it safer for everybody. It makes it safer for the community. It makes it safer for both the women providing the services and the men that are getting the services. So if you look at the big picture there, because like you said, you're not going to stop it. Okay.
That's the whole thing.
Just being a realist. Okay. So if you're not going to stop it, then make it better. Make it more respectable. Make it healthier. Make it safer. You know, turn it into something that you know, like I said, these women are getting health insurance. You know, I mean, you know, turn it into something that benefits everybody involved. Because if you've got men that are going to be going out after this anyway, and they're going to seedy places, and they're getting with women who may not be very healthy, and maybe they're married or they have girlfriends, they're bringing that home. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I said, taking the morality off there for a minute. If the man's going to do it anyway, let's make it safer for everybody then, including the surrounding community.
That's right, including the family and loved ones of anybody participating in anything like that. Well, and I'll tell you something else. It's one of the other things that we talk about all the time is how different we are because everybody has different things. And you know, I talk to my kids about this all the time and my grandkids about addictions. Everybody, the minute you say the word addiction, everybody immediately goes to drugs, alcohol, cigarettes. Now people are finally getting overeating as an addiction. It's maybe the last 10, 15 years that's been really discussed and really brought out into the open. And I see now there's commercials on TV about obesity being an illness, which I find mm-hmm. to be not my favorite way of looking at it. The point is that we have to understand that we're all different. And our likes
right.
and our dislikes will always be different. And sometimes I would guess, I don't know this for a fact, but I have talked to a couple young men who needed to talk, and they regularly go to hotels and make phone calls and have ladies come to their hotel. And I say, why? You know, aren't you happily married? Yes. It's just the excitement and the change and the difference. And this way I don't get a girlfriend. I don't hurt my wife like that. And they actually feel somewhere in there, in their misguided perception of what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
that they're not hurting anyone.
All right.
They think they're getting rid of some I don't know, angst or stress or whatever, or just feeding a you know, a habit and trying not to hurt anybody by doing it. So there's
right.
always different reasons for why everybody does things that they do. But again, you know, at the end of the day, even if we legalize it, even if everybody woke up tomorrow morning and said, you're right, and let's let some really nice places get set up where people can be safe and there's no more crime and there's no, you know, there's no pain rendered on another person in the, you know, like rape or just a beating or something like that when you're out in the streets. There will still be the streets. That won't go away. There will still
right.
be everything that's happening out there right now will still be there because it just will be. It's a way. We've talked about this at length, how many street people there are here in Florida. And that one night I gave all the statistics about how many homeless people there are here just in Florida, and it was devastating. Now,
mm-hmm.
how do you think some of those boys and girls make a few bucks when they need it?
Right.
That's almost always what they do. So you won't stop that. Again, you know, this all of it still can be rendered right down to the fact that we're trying to figure out a way to be kinder to each other. So even in that life, even if you're in that life, there really isn't any reason for you to hurt each other when you're doing the things you're doing. So, or knowing that there's something wrong with you and that you may have an illness or you may have picked up something and not sharing that, and not taking care of it instead of infecting anyone else. You and
right.
I often talk about the Law and Orders that we watch. There's always a Law and Order or Criminal Minds or one of those kind of shows on TV where somebody intentionally infects people with AIDS.
I know. Oh, I've seen more than one of them. And
mm-hmm.
it's astonishing to me that they will actually use that as a weapon,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
to get even with
to
somebody
hurt.
Or
yep.
to,
yep.
to
hurt.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's astonishing. And meanwhile, they don't even realize, yeah, you're hurting that person, but you're also hurting every other person that they're with. So you're hurting a lot of innocent people. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
I've never,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's amazing. Yeah, that's astonishing to me. And then those are all based on true life stories, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so you know that it's actually happened.
Well,
but,
for sure it has. I mean, one night on the show we talked about AIDS and we talked about the 70s. You know, I think I said something about that last night when I talked about bad choices. Look at our hair in the 70s and all those
yeah.
kind of things. And we laughed about that a little bit. But the 70s got it incredibly promiscuous.
Right.
I mean, it was almost like embarrassing. It was so promiscuous, and then we calmed down a little bit. But of course, now when I talk to young people, they look at sexual activity as an entirely different thing than what I did. Entirely different. First of all, they don't put any real worth on it. You know, they don't make it sound like it's something that should be just a little bit sacred. For them, that's not what it's about at all. Maybe they have the right idea. I don't know. But they don't feel that way about it. They think, when I say that to the grandchildren and stuff like that, they just look at me like, poor grandma, she's just so old, you know. And I know that's what they're thinking. And I think to myself, I said to some of the older ones, I said, how, you know, don't you think that's not a good thing to do to yourself? What about all those emotions and everything? What emotions, Graham? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm really out there in left field, apparently.
Well, see, unfortunately, because, and I'm going to go to diagram, but because of a lot of the growth hormones that are used in, well, all meat. I mean, a lot of people think when you talk about meat, you're talking about, you know, beef, steak. But I'm talking about chickens, I'm talking about pigs, I'm talking about, you know, cows. So any kind of meat, animal flesh, has got massive amounts of growth hormones in them, because the fact that the farming industry has created where people eat meat like, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, you have your breakfast sausage, you have your cold cuts at lunch, and then you have your main course at dinner. You know, when you go back 100 years ago, people didn't eat meat three times a day. A lot of times they didn't eat meat three times a week, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, people don't remember that, you know. You know, people think that we've always eaten meat, you know, from morning till dawn, and it's just not true. You know, we never ate meat to the level that we do now. And factory farming compressed after World War II, until after, like, the 1940s, okay? So animals weren't being injected with growth hormones back then. So generationally, it's gotten worse. Every 10 to 15 years, the factory farming has contaminated the animal population more and more and more, done more things to them to make them grow bigger and faster, to now supply this demand that the meat industry created, okay, by making people think that they need meat this often. So that's the thing. It's an artificially created demand that now they have to find ways of having these animals to stock fast enough. So what they do is they inject them with growth hormones, make them grow abnormally huge, abnormally fast, but then it doesn't cook out of the flesh. So, and our bodies are very sensitive to hormones and other chemicals. So when we eat non-organic food, now organic animals, you know, like when you get organic meat, they're not pumped full of all these chemicals. They don't have the growth hormones. They don't have the antibiotics. They don't have the pesticides in their food. So if you're going to be, I mean, I'm a vegetarian, but I always tell people, if you're going to be a meat eater, you know, I'm not fanatical about it. I'm like, just for the people. But if you are going
to be you're a little fanatical about it.
Well, for me, for myself. I'm not fanatical when it comes to other people. But I tell people, if you're going to be a meat eater, then do the organics. It's so much safer because you're not dealing with all that. And what's happening with kids today is because most of them, you know, eat at McDonald's and they're, you know, they're eating just regular factory farm meat products. They're being bombarded with hormones that affect their hormones. So they're coming into sexual, you know, the physical responses to the sexual changes in their body earlier than they're emotionally ready for it. So they're not making the emotional connection. And I agree with you. I think that's not a good thing. I think it's not a good thing that there is such a casual attitude towards what has always been for me, and every generation before me has always been something very special that you share with somebody special. No, and not that from time to time somebody has shared it with somebody that it turned out not to be the right person for them. I mean, you know, and that's all part of growing up and stuff. But it was always,
right.
You know, it was always seen like that one promiscuous person was the one who had the bad reputation, all that. And now it's like the one person that doesn't do it is the one with the reputation.
I know.
It's kind of flipped.
Uh-huh. Like there's something wrong with them or something.
Right.
Well, there was a lot of kids here a few years ago that took a celibacy oath in some of the schools, and I met some of those kids. As a matter of fact, we had a couple girls at Hippocrates who did that in their junior year in high school, and the deal was they took a vow of celibacy either until they found the person that they planned on marrying or until they were like 21.
Right.
And I said, how's it going? And they were both, well, I mean, they told me that they were both still practicing and that everything was cool and that it actually saved them from some bad decisions. And I said, how's that? And they said, well, because a couple times both of us have thought, oh my God, this is it. This is the perfect person. And if we had done something, it would have been bad. And I said, how so? Because I knew what I thought, but I wanted to hear what they thought. And they both told me together that it would have ruined things for them for the next time. And I said, why? And they said, because it would have left like a, you know, it would have been tainted then. And I said, well, part of me is glad that you feel that way, because I do think that it should be special. And I do think the emotions that comes with having a sexual relationship are for adults, for grown-ups.
Right.
And even some grown-ups I know have trouble dealing with them. So I do think that it is for a mind that has grown as much as your boobs have.
Yep. But see, but that's part of what I'm talking about. Think about it. My 10-year-old niece does have boobs now.
I know.
That never used to
I know.
Be. And again, this is specifically when you read a lot of these health, like the New England Medical Journal and publications like that. This goes back almost 15 years, if not more, that they started making the connection between the growth hormones in meat and the earlier ages that both boys and girls were starting to experience puberty, where it used to happen, you know, like in the mid-teens. It was happening at 10 years old and then 9 years old. And there's even been some girls and boys at 8 years old that started going through the physical changes. You know, the first time that I saw a 10-year-old girl who actually had breasts, I was shocked. You know, and they have young boys now that are starting to grow beards already and stuff like that. So, you know, so the physical bodies, regardless of what's happening to the physical body because of the growth hormones, which I find unfortunate, okay, it's nothing is happening to the brain. The brain is not maturing any faster. So here the body is, but the emotions aren't. So it's almost like out of necessity, these kids are making it more casual because they have the drive there before they have the emotion that goes with the drive.
I think that's true for sure. You and I've talked a lot about our a lot of our foods. I mean, you know, meat of course is the one that we think of immediately. But I want to tell you, I don't think it helps with all the pesticides either. I don't think it helps with how many times here in Florida airplanes fly over and spray for mosquitoes. I think there's a lot of things that are going on that have made us, you know, screwed up our normal development.
Physiology, right.
And I think that it gets worse and worse every day. Of course, I don't think that changes. I think, like you and I both know, we've had. Remember all the people that we would have that would come to Hippocrates that had chemical sensitivities?
Oh my God!
And I would be like, I don't know what to do for you. I feel like putting you in a bubble because I can't stop the world from going around, and I can't stop just what Mother Nature puts out there.
Right.
Forget
right.
other people. Just what Mother Nature puts out there is. Do you remember I did kind of like a test? I went to the mall. I took a shower here at home, washed my hair, didn't put any kind of lotion on, no perfume, no nothing on, and I went to the mall and intentionally tried to see what kind of smells I smelled. And I walked in to Macy's, and they've stopped it now, but remember when Macy's used to have somebody from the makeup counter approach you the minute you walked in, and she'd be spraying perfume on you and everything? And I love perfume. You know I love perfume. And I was like, I thought to myself, oh, my God, these poor people. How did they deal with this? And then I went on the elevator upstairs. Two ladies on the elevator had so much Estee Lauder on that I thought I was going to faint. And I was like, I guess I just had never thought about it before. It gave me a whole new understanding of how all these people with these chemical sensitivities, how bad it must be for them. But I don't know how you're going to keep somebody safe with that. As I said, I tried. Even, I mean, we even had people who couldn't have oils or any natural oils or anything, any scent at all would make them get all so that they couldn't breathe. Their noses would stop up. It was awful. So I don't know how we got on this tangent, but I guess having to do with the hormones and everything, and the outside, our surroundings have changed so much, and there's so much out there that it is hard to maintain who we were 20 years ago. You're absolutely right.
Right. I mean, even something that's, and a lot of people don't know this. You know this also from working in Hippocrates, but plastic bottles are the worst. You see me all the time. I don't drink out of plastic bottles. I only drink out of glass bottles. You know, but plastic bottles leach estrogens, okay, from the plastic, especially if you allow it to get kind of heat. And when the water is transported on trucks, it does get exposed to heat, all right?
Yeah.
I was reading a science report. This was about 2 months ago. I came across this on the internet where they're saying that the epidemic of man boobs is directly linked to plastic bottles now, because men are being so bombarded with estrogen that's not natural for the male physiology that it's actually creating this. There's been a link to that for a long time, but now they're starting to actually release some of these medical reports. You know, and this stuff is out there, and they don't make it common knowledge, because that is a huge industry. When you talk about Meat and Dairy Council and now the water industry, that is a huge, huge industry. And you know that Coca-Cola and Pepsi are running the two major brands. I think Dasani and what's the other one? They're made by Coke and Pepsi, and they actually outsell the sodas now. And people think that when they're drinking bottled water, they're doing something good for their body. But it's only good if you get the non-PBA free bottle, you know, the PBA free bottles, which is like essential.
Right.
There's some waters out there, they're a little bit more expensive, but they're in the like the glass grade plastic. So it's still plastic bottles, but they don't leach. And and it's becoming, but like when you get all your standard, like your Dasani's and your, I don't remember the other brands, but every time I go flying, I have to get a bottle because it's all that's there. But other than when I fly an airplane, I don't get that kind of plastic bottle of water. So once in a while, I'm exposing myself to it. But there are people that drink it every day, and it's not good. And it's another thing that messes with hormone levels. And, you know, even as an adult, obviously, it's another thing that's causing issues for the children. But even as adults, it causes all kinds of issues for women. It's also one of the major contributors to breast cancer, and it messes with men. It gives them the man boobs and things like that because it raises their estrogen level.
Well, I was reading an article the other day about whole milk for that reason, and I understood that to be a problem for, actually, the article was about male breast cancer, and they were talking about milk too much, especially milk from private farms and stuff like that, where it doesn't get pasteurized and it doesn't get this and it doesn't get that because of the hormones that they give to the dairy cows. And I was like, pretty soon there's really not going to be anything. I got somebody emailed me an article the other day about spinach because I eat so much spinach. And I eat so much spinach, I started saying I am what I am. And I got this email about it and said, you have to be careful now with spinach because of something that they're doing to the crops of spinach. And I was like, what? So the last time I bought organic spinach at BJ's, when I opened it, it stunk so bad that I not only threw it away, but I sealed it up again before I threw it away. I didn't have any of it.
Wow.
So I don't know what the scoop is with that. And you remember about 4 years ago when they weren't putting spinach on any of the menus or anything?
Yeah.
And we couldn't get spinach at Hippocrates. So I keep an eye out on that, Shelley, for me, because you read a lot of that stuff too. Because spinach is like a big mainstay, a healthy mainstay for me, and I will really miss that if I can't have spinach. So anyway, we've got off on a tangent about nutrition and all the other kinds of things, which stemmed from legalizing prostitution. And I think we're pretty much of the same mindset that obviously if we could legalize it and clean it up and make it, you know, what it needs to be, safe, sanitary, and you know, just, I don't know, like a business, a well-run business, well-run and organized business. There's no reason why, I mean, we always need more money in the local economy and what have you. I wouldn't have anything bad to say about anything like that. The only thing that I feel is that you still won't stop street prostitution because it's become something for our very unfortunate street people to utilize to get by.
Right.
Because even if they live on the streets and they aren't making a car payment and they aren't making a mortgage payment and they're not buying insurance, they still have to eat, they still have to have shoes, they still have to have clothes every now and then. So it has become a way of life for most of, especially the young kids that are street kids.
Right. Well, that's why we have to have more solutions for them so that that isn't the last resort that they have to consider.
Well, ironically, one of the shows that I plan not tomorrow night, because tomorrow night we're going to talk about the 4th of July and Independence Day and how we got there and all that kind of stuff. I'm always amazed to find out how many people think 4th of July is about firecrackers. They don't really know what it's about. So I thought tomorrow night we would talk about what the 4th of July means. And but I also got some statistics on. Have you ever heard of iHeartRadio?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Well, I was listening to iHeartRadio, and I listened to some people talking about how much suicides happen here in the United States, and the heaviest group is ages 10 to 24.
Oh, my goodness. They're, wow, that's surprising.
That, I mean, 10. Oh, my God, 10. If you'd have asked me if I knew what suicide was when I was 10, I'd have looked at you and said, is it an infection or something? I would have, I'm sure, Shelley, that I didn't know what suicide was when I was 10 years old.
Wow.
So
yeah, no, I don't believe I did either.
I did a little bit of research on it today when I was looking at the prostitution stuff and getting the stats for that and everything, and I found out that a good part of it, of course, it is 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds are because they realize that they are either gay, either gay boys or gay girls, and they are having trouble dealing with it and are afraid to tell their parents and all that kind of stuff. That's a big part of those real young numbers. And but so is bullying, and so is abuse. And another thing, another topic that we don't talk about a whole lot, because every time I look it up and try to do research on it, it's so convoluted that I guess I'm just not bright enough to be able to figure out how to do a show about it and keep it balanced, and that's severe mental illness, bipolarism, schizophrenia, all those kind of illnesses. They too could be attributed to what we're talking about right now about hormones and all of those kind of things, not to mention, you know, your bloodline. And it is really, really rampant and scarily so. And in so many cases, it's just managed with drugs and sometimes as young as 6 and 7 years old. So it's a big, big topic. I'd love to have Andy and Anthony maybe one night with us and really, you know, let them get ready for a show like that and really give us some input.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe help some people. I have somebody that I've gotten rather close to in the last year or so, and she has a son who they just don't know what to do, you know. They just don't know what to do. And I've spent time on the phone with this young man, and, of course, with me, he can put on a whole different face. And that's the scary part, you see. That is the scary part, because that schizophrenia, of course, means you can flip in and out of good, bad, indifferent, sad, any place you need to be. You're almost like a chameleon. And the poor parents that are dealing with things like that, I really don't know how they deal with it. Of course, then there's autism, which is a whole different arena. Nonetheless, a very challenging thing for young parents to go through. And siblings that are involved in both of those scenarios, too. So I would like to talk about that, because I first of all, I believe that those kids are often bullied, and often bullied by people very close to them just because they don't know what else to do. And if there's no solution, which often there is not, then these children grow into adults. And unless they're institutionalized, which doesn't happen as much as you might think it does, they're out there, and many of them become street people.
Right.
Because they just don't function.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, a lot of the diagnoses of, like, bipolarism and things like that are actually overdiagnosed, where somebody who is having a particular issue, it's almost like a label that's put on for some particular behavior that doesn't.
Did I lose you? How about that, everybody? We made it all this time without losing Shell. Well, I think what she's talking about, though, is the diagnosis very often is misleading and sometimes doesn't come through quick enough for young parents to be able to act on things like that. So ultimately what happens is the child goes from, second to maybe sixth grade just with what everybody keeps deeming behavioral problems. And you find out later that, there's maybe other issues. But, if you check out the streets, if you go to Miami Beach or Fort Lauderdale Beach, where I worked on both beaches in different hotels for one place for a year and a half and one place for 3 years, and I met a lot of these young kids because they'd come looking for jobs or seeing if they could wash my car to make $10 or things like that. So I'd meet them. And there's a lot. And on Fort Lauderdale Beach, there's a couple of hostels. And the kids get to stay the first night and don't have to pay anything, but they have to look for a job immediately. And when they get a job, if they want to keep staying there, then they have to pay rent. But it's very, very small rent. And they have to participate in the upkeep of this house. But I met so many there that I knew, even not being a professional and not even fully understanding the differences between bipolarism or even in some cases, pretty severe retardation and things like that. There's a lot of them, way too many. And of course, this is a part of that that population that's out there in the street all the time, and it leads to other problems, which is one of the things that make the prostitution end of things have so much crime involved with it. I think it's a kind of a big vicious circle.
I know. You know, and this is one of the reasons why I think it's unconscionable that our government spends money on some of the things that they spend it on, tests and they give grants for this test and then this thing being done by this college. And when you read the purpose of the of what they're researching, it has no sociological, no health benefit. It's just because they want to examine something. You know, I mean, I've seen some of these, and they're nutty, you know, where hundreds of thousands of dollars in grant money are given here and given there to the tune of millions of dollars every year for stuff that's just, like, nonsensical, or tests that have already been done dozens and dozens of times, and somebody is just doing it again just to, like, update records or something. It's ridiculous. You know, why not take that money and set up safe houses, set up places for these kids to go, get them off the street, get these street people off the street. You know, I mean, if you look at how many there are in any community, a few really nice safe houses, you know, that are run, that have kitchens in them, that are, you know, federally funded or whatever, you know, would really solve the problem. I mean, who cares about some of these you know, research studies that are done that are like nonsensical?
And surveys. There's millions of surveys done all the time that they pay people to do.
Yep.
Surveys.
And they spend a lot of money.
Let's
clean things up, and we'll deal with the surveys once we don't have so much suffering and crime in the streets, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
but,
it really is sad. But like I said, you've also got, when you've got all these street kids, the kids that just haven't been able to live a normal life, and some of them still have parents alive and relatively well, but they purely and simply don't know what to do anymore. Must be heartache for them, heartache for the kids. But then you've also got the ones that just simply don't have anybody. Either everybody's gone. But we talked one night, the night that we talked about the homelessness and the different, I still have copies of all the different places here in Florida that will put people up for a short amount of time. So the problem is there are a lot of these places, but there's nobody, I shouldn't say that, there may be somebody that I don't know about, but there's not enough people in the street that's saying, you know, what's the deal with you? What's going on with you? And assessing some of these people and maybe placing them accordingly. Now, I realize that that would be a really, really big job, but if you wanted to do it, that's pretty much what would have to happen. There would have to be people out there who care, people out there who would want to see the right thing happen. It would have to come from a good, these people would have to be able to come from a good place and a safe place and be able to help these people by assessing them, having enough education and training to see what's going on with them and put them in the place that's suitable for them, and have all these different places that would actually care for them in accordance to what the problem is that they're having. Otherwise, it won't work. If you just try to put everybody into a safe house or into any kind of a dwelling where they have to participate in a normal lifestyle like you would if you came here to stay with me, I'd make you do the dishes, make you do your own laundry, make you help clean up after dinner, all that kind of stuff. Some of these people can't function in that. So somebody would have to really pick and choose, you know, really, really delegate the places to put these people. We're almost out of time. Well, we've gone from prostitutes to nutrition to homeless people. It's been an interesting evening, to say the least, and I think that there are a lot of things that we can do as individuals, and, you know, if you just help out in your own little corner of the world, you're making a difference. So
exactly.
I hope everybody realizes that. Yes. So good night, my dear. Join me tomorrow night. I'll control myself and not do my rendition of I Am a Yankee Doodle Dandy. And we'll talk about why we celebrate the 4th of July. So everybody, from my heart to yours, good night and God bless. Good night, Shell.
Good night, Rain.